You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me back.
So we're supposed to small talk a little more, I think, in the beginning, right?
What do you have to small talk about?
That was my instinct, is that just like every, you know, every business meeting starts with a little small talk. I think our podcast should start with just a tiny bit of small talk, right? Well, we're going to Los Angeles in 5 days.
That's right.
That's something, right?
Yes. Yes, if we were on top of our release schedule, then we could ask people to let us know if they're in Los Angeles, but...
Right. But we're not.
We're not quite on top of it. We will be one day, though, right?
That's right. Sure, right. What are you doing in Los Angeles?
We are going to the Freeze Art Fair Week stuff. So there's Freeze, there's Felix, there's Spring Break. I believe those are the three. So we're going to scope those out, check them out, hang out with some people, see some art. And cool. Then we're doing some naturing.
Right, naturing up the coast, that's right.
And then the next part is...
And then I'm recording a play.
Yeah.
Called The American Revolution. That's right. And we're driving there. We're stopping at the Joshua Tree area on the way there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, for a little biking and hiking.
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it going to be warm? I haven't looked. You said there'd be a cold snap here, but is there going to be a cold snap there?
I'm not sure. You know, Los Angeles is very unpredictable weather.
Yeah. The last time, or I don't know, last year when we went around this time, we were there for their crazy rainstorms.
The atmospheric river.
Yes, that's right. The atmospheric river.
They just had another one. They seem to have them in February, since we go over there in February.
Yeah, except Freeze moved a little bit this year, so.
Right.
So I feel like that's why we missed him. I wonder if they moved it because the atmospheric river is always that.
I doubt that.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they did, but.
Fine.
They moved
it like a month, I think.
Did they?
Yeah.
So it's earlier this year?
No, it's later. I can't remember exactly. I think it was like the first week in February last year, and now it's practically the first week in March.
Yeah. I'm just not sure how predictable the atmospheric rivers in California are.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was really
super. Google that. That was thrilling, right?
That was super small. Like, I don't even think, I can't even see it. It was.
It's your idea.
It was insidiously small. And I'll definitely edit that whole thing out. But I do feel like it helped us ease into the podcast. And now I feel ready to go.
Great. Like, that's wonderful.
I've made clear to everyone that I think about regular things.
Do people care about that?
You know, it just makes us seem like human.
Right.
I don't think, you know, if people know that we're human. I mean, of course they do, but I don't know. I mean, I think it gives context. It gives...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's gossipy. People love gossip.
Yeah, we really, like, landed some good ones.
Well, and it gives a feeling for what we do in our normal lives, our little
That's
art
true.
Careers, our...
That's
our,
true.
You know.
We do work hard on our little art careers.
We do. And, of course, talking about them is small talk, so...
Oh.
That's how
it's a little harsh.
Large they live. I know, it is. But, okay, yeah, so we're smack dab in the middle of section seven of contributions to philosophy of the event. We're going to backpedal just a tiny bit so that we can read a little bit of what we read last week because it's so integral to what follows. So We're just going back maybe five paragraphs.
Which is more than a little bit, given how much we read. But we'll just go straight through it, I think. So it'll
I think so, quick. That's right.
And then we'll start discussing.
That's right. We won't stop. We won't stop too much in the middle of these of the old stuff. We'll just read the old stuff for context.
Great.
So, yeah, whenever you're ready.
Okay. When we hear God and gods spoken of, we think in accord with the kind of representing that has long been customary in that form, which is still indicated most readily by the name, quote, transcendence, a name that certainly is itself already polysemic. Intended is something that surpasses objectively present things, among them also human beings. Even where particular modes of surpassing and of what surpasses are denied, this way of thinking can itself not be denied. In reference to it, we can even readily survey today's, quote, worldviews. One, the transcendent, inaccurately also called, quote, transcendence, is the God of Christianity. Two, this, quote, transcendence is denied, and the, quote, people itself, Two, this, quote, transcendence is denied, and the, quote, people itself, its essence, left rather indeterminate, is put forth as the goal and purpose of all history. This anti-Christian, quote, worldview is only apparently unchristian, for in essence, it nevertheless agrees with the kind of thinking that characterizes, quote, liberalism. Three, the transcendent is in the above case an, quote, idea or, quote, value, or, quote, meaning, something for which one cannot live or die, but which is supposed to be realized through, quote, culture. Four, any two of these transcendences are mixed together, Christianity and ideas of a people, or cultural politics and ideas of a people, or Christianity and culture. Or else all three are mixed in various degrees of determinateness. This mixed formation is today the average and dominant, quote, worldview, in which everything is intended, but nothing can any longer come to a decision.
Yeah, that's where we left off last time, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was cool to actually revisit it. I didn't quite realize, I mean, he really did say, like, so one is Christianity, and then, is two ideas or is two the politics?
Two is the people.
Okay. Yeah, so the ideas of the people, and then three is politics, cultural politics. Right.
Yeah. So it's one worldview is that God, the God of Christianity, is the transcendent. Another worldview is that the people are the transcendent.
Right.
And the third worldview is that culture or idea, value, or meaning are the transcendent. And then he points out that a kind of a mescaline of these together is generally what we see.
Mm-hmm. And that makes for the dominant worldview.
This mixed formation, yep. It's the average and dominant worldview.
Yeah.
In which everything is intended, but nothing can any longer come to a decision.
That's cool. That's a really cool way to say
yeah,
it.
I think we'll leave that there. But yeah, why don't we keep reading?
Okay, cool.
I was also thinking that, you know, I think in general, when we start reading, you should tell us what page you're starting on.
Oh yeah,
on that book, so that people can
That's
read along.
A really great idea. Well, and you're in the Kindle, so you could also say right where you are in the Kindle, in case they're in the Kindle.
Well,
where is that?
I don't quite know how to do that. I mean,
so if you
tap on it, yeah, I can. You're right.
You'll say
so
like
we're on page 22.
Yep, that's what mine says too.
In the Kindle right now.
And this is page 22. we're in the book.
We're on page 22 in the book as well?
Yeah.
That seems like it's not going to continue to sync up, but maybe it will. I don't know. No, it can't be. I mean...
Well, if you go to the next screen, does it say 23?
Oh, no, you're right. It doesn't. So it's actually referencing the page numbers of the print book. Oh,
that's cool.
That's interesting.
Okay, wow, discoveries. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, page 22 is where we are now. We started on 21.
Okay, super. Page 22. Go ahead.
Okay. As different as these, quote, worldviews are, and as fiercely as they battle one another, whether openly or in a hidden way, provided wandering around in the undecided may still be called battling, they all agree from the start, without realizing it or even considering it, that the human being can be taken as already known in essence, as the being in relation to which and on the basis of which all, quote, transcendence is determined. Indeed, determined as something that is itself supposed to determine the human being in the first place. This is made radically impossible, however, because humans are thereby already fixed in their determinability instead of being determined as what must be dislodged out of a previous fixity so as to be first attuned toward a determinability.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say continue to read.
Okay.
We will go back.
Okay. Yet how are human beings supposed to be dislodged out of their fixity, to which belongs primarily the domination of those, quote, transcendences and of their mixtures? If humans must carry out this dislodging by relying on their own resources, then is not the presumptuousness of giving the measure even greater than it is when the human being is simply put forth as the measure? Or is it possible that this dislodging could befall humans? It could, to be sure. And that is the plight of the abandonment by being. This plight does not first need help, but instead must itself first become the help. Yet this plight must actually be experienced. What if humans are hardened against it, indeed, as it seems, more obdurately than ever? Then those who awaken must arrive, those who would be the last ones to believe they had discovered the plight because they are aware of suffering it.
Yeah, I think we should go back.
Yeah.
Maybe, yep.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a beautiful section, and of course it always is. I don't read ahead before we start, and I often come with something to talk about, and he always talks about what I planned on talking about.
That's crazy.
It's really crazy. But you know,
Is that like because everything he talks about always relates to everything, or
that's probably
I guess that's,
or my thinking could be generated out of the last time we read, and I'm thinking what's kind of bubbling up out of that.
Yeah.
Or he's
some things like we really couldn't have planned.
Absolutely.
Like there have been some really crazy synchronicities.
Absolutely.
Like that are like shocking.
That's right.
Yeah.
But let's explicate a little bit, and I don't think I'll necessarily lay down what I sort of had to say, which isn't very much, but it was just a little thing. But as different as these worldviews are, this worldview of transcendent, the God of Christianity is the transcendent, the worldview of the people is the transcendent, and the worldview of culture, or what's essentially ideas, values, and ideas, values, and meanings. These three worldviews, as different as they are, and then, to me, he's such a comic here, and as fiercely as they battle one another, whether openly or in a hidden way, provided wandering around in the undecided may still be called battling.
That is hilarious.
Wandering around in the undecided. Yeah. They whether they, as different as they are and as fiercely as they're battling one another by wandering around in the undecided, they all agree from the start, without realizing it or even considering it, that the human being can be taken as already known in essence, as the being in relation to which and on the basis of which all transcendence is determined. Indeed, determined as something that is itself supposed to determine the human being in the first place. So they all share one thing, and that is that they operate on this assumption, or they wander around in the indecision of this fact, and that is that the human being can be taken as already known in essence. We already know what the human being is. In the transcendent, in the God of Christianity as the transcendent, we know that the human being is the product of God as creator. In the people as the transcendent, we know that the human is just a element of the people and is expected to stand with, represent, fight for, be homogeneous with the ideal of the people. And in the cultural worldview of ideas, values, or meanings, the human being is expected to participate in that culture, support that culture, share those ideas, value those values, and propagate those meanings. And even more than that, in those assumptions of what the human being is, these three worldviews assume that humans, that that's what humans are, that humans, that's sort of all there is to humans. But it's more than that, he says. It's not only that they think the human being is already known, they know, it's sort of like it's assumed that that's what human beings are. They all agree that the human being can be taken as already known in essence. They agree that the human being can be known as the being in relation to which and on the basis of which all transcendence is determined. So All the transcendent ideas that we must live for and fight for are based on and stand in relation to the human being. Indeed, they are determined as something that is itself supposed to determine. So they're not just determined by the human being, they determine the human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is made radically impossible, however, because humans are thereby already fixed in their determinability instead of being determined as what must be dislodged out of a previous fixity so as to be first attuned toward a determinability. Now, that's okay. So all these things are determined. The transcendence is determined according to human beings. Indeed, it determines human beings. However, he says, this is actually impossible that it would be determining human beings because humans are thereby already fixed in their determinability by these worldviews. That humans aren't actually determined by them. Humans are fixed in their determinability. They are determined already. Instead of being determined, they are fixed in their determinability as what must be dislodged out of a previous fixity so as to be first attuned toward a determinability. So this is made radically impossible because humans are thereby already fixed in their determinability instead of being determined as what must be dislodged out of a previous fixity so as to be first. So humans are determined as what all to be attuned toward being determined, they would have to be dislodged out of the fixity of determinability, but that is already determined for them, so they're determined, right? Mm-hmm. And it says, yet how are human beings supposed to be dislodged out of their fixity? How is this dislodging out of their fixity, or in a sense we might say, how are they to be dislodged out of their role as a mannequin that fulfills the worldview that they have or live in, right, as an agent of that worldview. How are they to be dislodged? To which belongs primarily the domination of those transcendences and of their mixtures. The fixity. How are they to be dislodged out of these transcendences and their mixtures? If humans must carry out this dislodging by relying on their own resources, then is not the presumptuousness of giving the measure even greater than it is when the human being is simply put forth as the measure? So it is presumptuous. So humans have to carry out this dislodging on their own. And he says it's even more presumptuous to give the measure whereby they live than it is to make them the measure, to put them forth as the measure. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then he says, is it even possible that this dislodging could befall humans? Could they even break free of their fixity inside the worldview? It could, to be sure, he says. And that is the plight of the abandonment by being. Mm. So when we hear this phrase, the plight of the abandonment by being, it is the possibility that humans would be dislodged, or this dislodging from the worldview would befall human beings. This plight does not first need help, but instead must itself first become the help. This plight needs to become the help of this dislodging. Yet this plight must actually be experienced. What if humans are hardened against it? Indeed, as it seems, more obdurately than ever, more fixedly than ever. Then those who awaken must arrive, those who would be the last ones to believe they had discovered the plight, because they are aware of suffering it. So the plight of the abandonment by being is that being has abandoned us because we are subsumed, fixed, and determined by these worldviews. Mm-hmm. So being has abandoned us because of this fixity in the worldview. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Yet the abandonment by being that we have suffered due to being fixed in a worldview is our plight. And this plight, realizing this plight, understanding this plight, is how we come to help ourselves and dislodge ourselves and awaken, as he said, through this plight because we are suffering it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
This whole section, I would say, highlights something we might have talked before about in this podcast, or maybe just personally, you know, the, I would say, disparagement toward worldviews that Heidegger has. And we get a really beautiful description here as to why he disparages the idea of worldview.
Yeah.
Because it determines and fixes humans in an abandonment by being.
Mm-hmm. Or,
In the plight of the abandonment by being.
Well, I think actually getting out of it is the plight of the abandonment by being. Being fixed and lodged in it is being fixed and lodged.
Right. That's right. Right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, being in it and being and trying to get out of it are like the same thing in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, read.
Keep reading. Okay, yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Unless you want to say something.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Okay. The awakening to this plight is the first dislodging of the human being into that between where confusion presses on and, in like measure, the God continues to abscond. This, quote, between, however, is not a, quote, transcendence in relation to the human being. It is, on the contrary, that open realm to which the human being pertains as the one who grounds and preserves, inasmuch as this being, qua Dasein, is appropriated by being itself, which essentially occurs as nothing other than event.
Yeah. When this plight is awakened in us, the first dislodging of the human being into that between where confusion presses on, so that between, sort of the between, in a sense, Well, we don't know between what, between transcendence and non-transcendence, between fixed and unfixed. You wake to this plate, it dislodges you, and the God continues to abscond. The God continues to slip away. This between is not a transcendence, so it's not outside of the human being, or outside of the non-transcendent, what should we call that? The reality, in a sense, the empirical physical world. In relation to the human being, it is, on the contrary, that open realm. So here we go, right away. That between, he says, is the open realm to which the human being pertains as the one who grounds and preserves, inasmuch as this being, qua Dasein, is appropriated by Bang itself, which essentially occurs as nothing other than event. And I think it's actually time for me to kind of just say the one little thing I was going to say. Because it dawned on me that it's about this word event. Mm-hmm. And this section is called Of the Event. And this book is called Contributions to Philosophy of the Event. And I think it's important to, because we're near the beginning of the book, to just kind of give a quick, I would say, what dawned on me this week was the relationship between event and Bang, and why this book is about the relationship between event and Bang, and what event and Bang means, and because it really helps focus, I would say, the thrust of the book vis-a-vis a lot of the things that it's casting aside from the idea of the event or Bang, such as a worldview or imagination or a fixity or determining transcendence. Okay, so the word in German for event is Ereignis, and it means event or happening or occurrence. So it's a very spatiotemporal, limited, momentous happening. It's an event. Right. It doesn't mean it's like a concert in the desert. That's an event, though, too. An event is anything that happens. So it can be of any duration. It can be of any location. But it is recognized by us as an occurring. And that is the word Ereignis. Now, Ereignis etymologically links up with some other words that I think highlight why Heidegger has chosen this word. At its root, it has the word Eigen, E-I-G-E-N, which is the German word for own, or specific or particular. So that is my own house. Okay? That refers to something that is unique to a specific person or a specific thing. It has connotations of specificity and particularity. So it really really almost describes and delimits an individual, particular space and denomination. Individual might be another way to think about it. Eigentum, which is kind of the nounification of the word eigen, means property. So what you own, what is yours and no one else's. Eigentum. Eigenschaft, which in a sense means the making one's own, is the word for characteristic, capacity, or feature. So the eigenschaft of something is something that is characteristic of it, specifically belonging to it as a descriptive feature of it and it alone, in a sense. So all these things circle around the root eigen, I would say it gives insight into what the book is about and what the book is urging us to do. And I think what the book is urging us to do is, and then we have the word Bang, and Bang is, as he says here, Bang occurs as nothing other than event. So bang is the truth of the event. Bang is, you know, it's an alteration of the word being. So instead of Heidegger saying events or happenings or occurrences or individuals or particulars or specifics or characteristics or unique properties, instead of saying they have being, he's changed the letter, B-E-Y-N-G. He's calling it bang because he feels that the way we've come to think about being doesn't help us understand, get appropriated by, or relate to events, because being kind of gets in the way of our understanding of what an event is. So he's coined this word bang. And so events have bang instead of being. They have bang. Just in the way something that we think of has being, events have what he calls bang. And this book is the expostulation of what is bang, what is the event. Mm-hmm. And in this section, he talks about fixity, determinateness, worldview. I would add words like category, predestination. You know, some of the ways we talk today is people belong to a race, people belong to a gender, people belong to a class, people belong to a set of privileges. So these super categories, these labels, these umbrella terms, or these collectivist adjectives that subsume and fix and determine the individuals onto which they sort of grab, are perfect contemporary examples of Heidegger's determinateness, transcendence, worldview, fixity, etc. And so he says here, as the human seeks to get unfixed from these categories, labels, or transcendences, or worldviews, they must do it by heading out into the open realm as the one who grounds and preserves, as Dasein, and get appropriated by being and interact with the event. Mm-hmm. So it's about a whole new way of thinking about what the human being is, which is where he starts this whole section. These worldviews all start from an assumption of knowing what the essence of the human being is. And that's because they are, in a sense, they are categories. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like lump sums that you try to fit some particular value into. And we operate by these lump sums, by these worldviews, by these categories, by these labels all the time, and they blind us to the particular, the specific, the event. And you know, events are limited on all sides by space and time, yet when we're working with being, and we're working with transcendence, and we're working with worldview, and we're thinking through categories, we don't see those delimitations. We don't ever see the individual. We don't see the particular. We don't see the specific, because we don't know how. We're seeing something else. We're seeing categories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think that's all I kind of wanted to say. I think for me, it's about why Heidegger is pushing this idea of event. Why is he pushing this idea of bang, which is the truth of the event, or which occurs as event? And he's doing it because he's saying thousands of years of metaphysics has given us these sort of huge, as he calls them, systems of thought, systems of perception, systems of relation that prevent us from seeing the specific, the individual, in its unique and timely state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, those resonances there about anxiety, about the way you relate to the world when you have anxiety, about the way the world is perceived that then foments anxiety. And of course, there's a lot of resonance here with identitarianism, which is a categorizing, labeling, ensaming, collectivizing, world-viewing way of you know, sort of crushing the individual aspects of human beings, assuming you know what human beings are, and making them tools of your movement or your ideas or your agenda or your ideologies. So to me, there's a lot of important things there about why Bang and Event are exciting to someone who might want to break free from the ravages of category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's another translation of this book, and it uses, instead of the word event, isn't it an owning?
That's right. An owning. ENOWNING. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
I think that's literally how they translate the word event.
Ereignis.
Or the Ereignis.
That's right. That's right. Because ER in German sort of serves the same role as EN in English. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a mesh, then you enmesh. Mm-hmm. You put into the mesh. Mm-hmm. So, and Ereignis is, in a sense, to make. To put into the own, to mm-hmm. put into the particular, to particularize. Mm-hmm. You're right. An owning. It's a lovely word, and it definitely highlights that aspect of Ereignis.
I feel like this section really nicely lays out the sort of, like you said, like where we were or where we are, and so why that's an issue, and then how to start trying to get dislodged from
that's
that.
Right. It does.
It's like very almost, it's like one of, feels like one of the most sort of almost step by step sections.
Yes, that's right.
And the between, I think, is also like a interesting.
Yes.
Thing. I was curious how you were seeing it relating to anxiety, the fixedness.
Well, not to get too, you know, not to get too heavy, but take the knife laying on the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knife on table. Knife on table is a happening. Knife on table is a specific moment. There's a knife on a table. In its specificity, it is nothing more than knife on table. And it seems to me that one thing anxiety does, or let us say that one thing a person does who experiences anxiety in the presence of knife on table, is if knife on table is an event that has its own kind of closed system, that it just is there, a knife on table, how does it become an object of fear? How does it become an object of fantasy? How does it become an object of potential? How does it become an object that overtakes a person and starts dragging a person around and become a fearsome force in a person's imagination, and then therefore create anxiety around the idea of what might happen with that knife, what that knife might facilitate, what a person might do with that knife, what that knife conjures, means. You know, all the things that spur outward from a knife on a table, the event of a knife on a table, all the things that swirl outward from that are, I would say, kind of resonances or leechings or grabbings or perpetuations of worldview, transcendence, fixities, mm-hmm. determinations that are lodged in the human being experiencing that event of knife on table. And those worldviews, transcendences, you know, fixities are dragging that person along into the categorical facets of that knife on the table and making those categorical facets as real as knife on table. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And so we ask ourselves, why does that happen? And it's because, as Heidegger points out, our minds, you know, are basically made in the bakery of worldviews. Mm-hmm. We think we control them. We think we own them. We think they're just ours, but they're not. We are dragged around, thrown around continually by, let's just call them worldviews, determining worldviews that tell, that they don't tell us what we're seeing and what we're feeling. They're like slipping on ice. They're the ice under our feet. So, you know, knife on table is standing still on the ice. The worldview that takes that knife on table and makes it a thing that can swirl outward through any number of fantasies and imaginings and possibilities is slipping on that ice. Mm-hmm. And that worldview is the ice. Or the worldview is, in a sense, the ice and the wind that blows you down and across the ice.
Hmm. Yeah, that's well said.
Want to keep reading?
Yeah. Okay. If through this dislodging, humans come to stand in the event and remain steadfast there in the truth of being, then they still stand first only on the verge of the leap to the decisive experience as to whether in the event the remaining absent or the intrusion of the God decides for humans or against them. Only if we appreciate how uniquely necessary being is and how it nevertheless does not essentially occur as the God himself, only if we have attuned our essence to these abysses between the human being and being, and between being and the gods, only then do, quote, presuppositions for a, quote, history start to become actual again. Consequently, all that matters for thinking is meditation on the, quote, event.
Yeah, I mean, he just goes on and on.
Yeah, he's just continuing
to
this
get
narrative.
Better.
I don't know if it's narrative is the right word, but this trail of of what happens.
Yeah, as you get dislodged, you start to stand in the event, and you remain steadfast there in the truth of bang that is the event. You stand steadfast in the face of the specific, the particular, the unowned. You still stand on the verge of the leap to the decisive experience. So as you stand there steadfast in the event, you're still on the verge of a leap to the decisive experience. So in a sense, to the deciding, the experience that will provide you with making a decision as to whether in the event the remaining absent or the intrusion of the God decides for humans or against them. Okay, that is, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems, okay, there's a decision that you're on the verge of leaping into, and that decision is going to be between two things. Or maybe four things, which multiplied by each other is actually 16 things. So the decision is going to be whether in the event, so in the event that we're looking at, the God staying away or the God coming in decides for humans or against them. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the God? Well, you know, he talks a little bit on it. He goes, only if we appreciate how uniquely necessary being is and how it nevertheless does not essentially occur as the God himself, Only if we have attuned our essence to these abysses between the human being and Bang, and between Bang and the gods. So only if we appreciate... how uniquely necessary being is, and how it nevertheless does not essentially occur as the God himself. So he uses being here, the word mm-hmm. being. God is not in being. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Only if we appreciate how God is not in being, and only if we've attuned our essences to the abysses or the betweens that lie between the human being and Bang, and between Bang and the gods, only then do presuppositions for a history start to become actual again. So only then do we start to really develop the presuppositions that can create a history for us.
Mm-hmm.
So really quick, I think, what is the God? That's really the important question here. Do you have anything you could say about that?
I mean, this is the last God, right? That's the same idea that he refers to as the last God.
Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't use that phrase here, does he?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems almost that the God is maybe. I mean, if you're as he says, as he finishes here, he says, all that matters for thinking is meditation on the event,
yeah.
Meditation on Bang. The human being and Bang have a gap between them, and Bang and God,
mm-hmm.
or the God, have a gap between them. I would think that the God or the gods is, in a sense. You know, when we talk about event or Bang, we're talking about very particular, specific, spatiotemporal, delimited moments of experience. But the God or the gods are beyond all that. They are, in a mm-hmm. sense, the transcendent. They are the they are what we might get an inkling of that stands outside the spatiotemporal.
Mm-hmm.
It's the supernatural. It's perhaps the sublime. It's perhaps a feeling. Some people think God is just a feeling. It's perhaps an objective truth. It's perhaps a sense of a timelessness, a thing or factor that touches all events. But I think, you know, it's any number of those things, but it's outside the event, right?
Yeah.
But it's not being.
Yeah.
Okay. And he says, the decision that needs to be made, so you're experiencing the event, right? The decision is, I think this is it. If you're experiencing an event and you get an inkling of a transcendence or an otherworldliness or a supernaturalness or a God. It's like a catch word for all these things for him. An objectivity, right? If you're experiencing the event, and this is at the end of this paragraph, he says, you stand on the verge of the leap to the decisive experience as to whether in the event the remaining absent or the intrusion of the God decides for humans or against them. So you need to decide if in meditating on the event, if you sense an objectivity via the event or you don't sense an objectivity via the event, do either of those things decide for humans or against them? I'm not sure what decide against them means, but what does it mean for humans that what does it mean for you as a human? What does it mean for humans in general that they can get to the God or not to the God through the event?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
And coming to understand the way the objective lingers outside the event and a meditation on the event is the beginning of establishing presuppositions for a history. Now, we're going to get into that later. Like, what is, why a history? What's so important about a history? He will talk a lot about that, so we'll get to that. But he finishes saying, all that matters for thinking is meditation on the event. And I should stop talking because I think I'm...
No, that's great.
Finally, so actually he says finally here, so maybe we should keep going.
Yeah. Finally and above all, the quote, event can be inventively thought, hailed before inceptual thinking. Only if being itself is conceived as the quote between for the passing by of the last God and for Dasein.
Yeah, the event, you know, as you're meditating on the event, it can be inventively thought only if Bang is understood to be the place through which the last God and Dasein pass. Mm. So don't leave Bang if you're looking for the last God or Dasein. Stay in Bang and understand that's where those will occur. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Keep reading.
Yeah.
The event consigns God to the human being by assigning the human being to God. This consigning assignment is the appropriating event. In it, the truth of Bang is grounded as Dasein, and the human being is transformed, set out into the decision of being there and being away. And history takes its other beginning from being. The truth of being, however, as the openness of the self-concealing, is at the same time transposition into the decision regarding the remoteness and nearness of the gods, and so is preparedness for the passing by of the last God.
Yeah, he can. You know, he understands that what he's talking about requires continual explication.
Yeah.
So the event consigns God to the human being. So by meditating on the event and gaining thereby an inkling of, let's just call it an objectivity outside the event, right? That objectivity is consigned to the human being. It's uber eignet. So there's that word eignet. Uber eignet means to consign, mm-hmm. to in a sense assign, uber eignet, to make one's own, to almost with the idea of an obligation. The event consigns God or objectivity to the human being via the event by assigning the human being to God. Zoo eignet. So uber eignet is consign. Zoo eignet is assign. So essentially, in relating with the event, meditating on the event, you have an objectivity experience, and that is God being consigned and assigned, you being consigned to God and God being assigned to you, or the other way around. But yeah, this consigning assignment is the appropriating event. So God is consigned and assigned. God is consigned to you, and you are assigned to God, and vice versa, via the appropriating event. And when you are appropriated by the event, diese über eignende Zueignung ist Ereignis. So he literally uses three forms of the word eigen in one phrase there. In it, the truth of Bang is grounded as Dasein. And the human being is transformed, set out into the decision of being there and being away. And history takes its other beginning from Bang. So that's why, you know, he talked about history earlier. And I was like, why history? Presuppositions for history. He's talking about a history that is separate from historiology. Mm-hmm. So we step out of historiology, which is really just worldview, fixity, determination, you know, culture, ideas, transcendence, the people, blah, 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 story, identity. A true history, a history outside of historiology, out of a determined history, takes its other beginning, and we hear that phrase again, from Bang. Mm-hmm. So in the experience with Bang and the assigning to the god and the consignment of the god and the transformation via the event and meditation on the event from Bang, you gain the other beginning, which is you actually start to live a history that is your own. Mm-hmm. Not, and you know, that's relevant to the knife on the table. Mm-hmm. When you experience the knife on the table and that starts spinning out into fears and fantasies and imaginings that are negative and frightening, you're living an historiology. Mm-hmm. The historiology is actually telling itself through you. It's telling you as itself. It's mm-hmm. telling you like it's telling you like a story.
Mm, yeah, right.
Do you see?
Yeah.
And what he says here is you can actually start to live your own history, not your own historiology, but your own history, mm-hmm. which means you then, when you experience the knife on the table, you and you experience the other beginning via Bang and the meditation on the event and mm-hmm. the event of the knife on the table, you then start having a history via this event. This event becomes the other beginning of a history that is your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we should keep reading. I think we're close to the end of the section, so we should.
Yeah, I think we should try to hit the end of this section.
I agree, because it just feels very related to itself.
Yeah, I'll try to be quiet.
No.
Yeah, please go ahead.
The event is the, quote, between in regard to both the passing by of the god and the history of mankind. Yet it is not an irrelevant connecting field. Instead, the relation to the passing by is the opening needed by the god of the fissure. And the relation to humans is the appropriation that allows to arise the grounding of Dasein and thus the necessity of sheltering the truth of Bang in beings as a restoration of beings. I guess you gotta talk that one through, though. Right? I mean, there's a lot there. Or should we just read that? Is this a couple of more paragraphs, then come back?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, the passing by is not history. History is not the event, and the event is not the passing by. Yet all three, if we may indeed bring them down to the level of numbers, can be experienced and inventively thought only in their relations, i.e. out of the appropriating event itself. The remoteness of undecidability is of course not a, quote, beyond, but is what is closest of the still ungrounded, quote, there of Dasein, which has become steadfast in preparation for the refusal as the essential occurrence of Bang. This that is closest is so close that all unavoidable pursuit of machinations and of lived experiences must necessarily have passed it by already, and therefore can never be brought back immediately to it. The event remains the most alienating.
Ay, ay, ay. Should I talk a little?
Yes.
The event is the between in regard to both the passing by of the god and the history of mankind. So the event is, in a sense...
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Sorry. Just like he's now saying the event is the between, which is, I mean, kind of feels a different to sort of how we were talking about the event.
Yeah. Well, that's why he qualifies it here. I think he says it's the between in regard to the passing by of the god. So the event is the between
in relation to this,
god not being there and the god being there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the space of travel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the history of mankind. It's the between of what I would almost call, well, it's a between between historiology and mm-hmm, genuine history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yet it's not an irrelevant connecting field. It's not just, right? It's not like just an electrical medium. It's not a copper wire. Instead, the relation to the passing by is the opening needed by the god of the fissure.
Yeah.
So, you know, the event has a relation to the passing by that provides an opening for the god. Mm-hmm. And the relation to humans is the appropriation that allows to arise the grounding of dust sign. So the relation of this event to humans is the appropriation that allows to arise the grounding of Dasein, so humans can ground Dasein through this opening, this event, this between, and thus the necessity of sheltering the truth of Bang in beings as a restoration of beings. So the grounding of Dasein, and thus the necessity of sheltering the truth of Bang in beings as a restoration mm-hmm. of beings, to restore being to beings by sheltering the truth of Bang. So in the event you find Bang, you shelter the truth of it, you give it to being in order to restore being to beings. Mm-hmm. And the passing by is not history. So the passing by of the god is not history. So the inkling or the appearance of an objectivity or supernature is not, that comes and goes. That is not history. And history is not the event. The event is always just a specific, particular, its own thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the event is not the passing by, right? Because the event is separate from the inkling or the occurrence of the supernature or the objective. Mm-hmm. Yet all three can be experienced and inventively thought only in their relations. They all are related to each other out of the appropriating event itself, the event that appropriates us into it, mm-hmm. that appropriates yeah. Dasein. Dasein and the event have this kind of relationship that facilitates and engages in this triad of the passing by, history, and the event. The remoteness of undecidability, there's an owl.
Yeah, it's loud.
It's right outside the yurt. The remoteness of undecidability is, of course, not a beyond. So the undecidability is that, you know, there's things that are undecided. Importantly, there's things that are undecided, and we hold on to that undecidability. It's not a beyond. It's not way out there. But it is, in fact, what is closest. It's the closest part of the still ungrounded there of Dasein. Where are we? Where is that there that we are? It is the closest part of that ungrounded there that is the undecidability. See that? So Dasein is, in a sense, being there. But where is there? What is there? That's undecided. Mm-hmm. And that undecidability is not some faraway thing. It's actually the very closest aspect of that undecided there-ness mm-hmm. that we are. Mm-hmm. And that Dasein has become steadfast in preparation for the refusal as the essential currents of Bang. It is steadfast, it is firm in its preparation for refusing, meaning not just jumping on any wagon, let's think of it that way, as the way for Bang to occur essentially. Mm-hmm. This that is closest, in a sense, we'll call it the undecided there-ness of Dasein, mm-hmm. is so close that all unavoidable pursuit of machinations and of lived experiences must necessarily have passed it by already. Because they just, machination and lived experience are unavoidable pursuits. Like we're stuck in them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yet they've passed by this undecidable there-ness. Mm-hmm. And they can never be brought back immediately to mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. The event remains the most alienating. It alienates us from machination, from lived experience, mm-hmm. from historiology, from transcendence, from identity. Mm-hmm. but we remain steadfast, right?
Yeah.
In our commitment as refusal to experience the essential occurrence of bang in the event, in the particular, in the specific. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not in the categories, the assignations, the determinations, the fixities of some worldview that determines for us what individuals are outside of their ownness.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And not just individuals, but anything.
Mm-hmm.
Tireless, indefatigable, stern, preparatory, steadfast meditation on the specific ownness of each occurrence of bang is the path to genuine history, which means your life starts to unfold in its own way, not as a projection of an historiology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said.
That was section 7.
Yeah.
Anything more to say?
No. No, it's a... Yeah, that was a really... Yeah, very beautiful.
That was a beautiful
section. It sort of like felt like a full map in a way.
Right.
The book. Because like there's so many of these words that we'll come back to a lot.
Right.
And talk about a lot more. Like some things just mentioned, like the leap, fissure, between, play.
Right.
I mean, just mentioned. But
yes.
I don't know. This to me almost feels like a summary of the book, which is.
Yes.
Or an outline or something, which is
yes,
really
very
cool.
Insightful. You're right. It's like a little cliff notes. Or
yeah, exactly.
It's like a little
Heideggerian cliff notes.
Yeah, in theater, it's in musical theater. It's well, probably in opera and symphonies. It's called an overture.
Yeah,
you right, almost hear
exactly.
In an overture. You hear little quick yeah. glimpses of all the musical themes that you're about to hear in the
yeah.
whole piece. This is, in a sense, like a lexical overture mm-hmm. of the book.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah, it's like all, yeah, like all the words are.
You can like feel him writing this,
yeah.
right? He's just like, this is the, you yeah, know, the yeah. nugget of what
yeah.
it's such a huge universe. It's such a
yeah.
huge picture of what meditation and thought
mm-hmm.
are
mm-hmm.
when they are free of historiology.
And it just keeps going.
Yes.
It's like at the beginning, you're, I don't know, like, you know, the sort of first part where he's leaving worldviews, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, that's pretty big. And then
right.
it just keeps getting bigger
right.
and bigger and more detailed. And
right. Definitely.
More
and it ends with this,
poetic.
You know, this
and it's alien. I mean, that's a...
The event remains the most alienating.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like, actually, even on the back of the book, there have been a couple places. On the back of the book, the quote says, some of the darkest pages Heidegger wrote are here. And it's interesting because there are some, but I'm not sure if that's dark or not, but that's what it made me think of, that there is I've never thought of it as a dark book, actually. But when I read that quote, I was like, oh, is it? But maybe alienating is not dark.
You know,
maybe it's actually freeing. Because it's, like you said, it's alienating from worldviews and imagination.
Absolutely.
That's
a brilliant perception. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if this alienation quote, and I feel like I've also read it somewhere else about this book, saying it's sort of a darker take.
Oh, I mean, that's,
I think they're wrong. That's right.
I totally agree.
So actually optimistic.
Oh, I totally. This is a liberationist text. This
yeah,
is actually
exactly.
like I'm actually going to take you to the light.
Yeah, exactly.
The darkness is what this text yeah. is trying to drag you out of.
Yeah.
Somebody would say that some of the darkest, you know, what does it say? The darkest text that Heidegger.
Some of the darkest pages Heidegger wrote here.
Yeah, I mean, they might, in that sense, mean obscure,
yeah.
which is definitely true.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. If you're fixated and dedicated to the darkness of a worldview, to the darkness of historiology, the darkness of machination, the darkness of lived experience, the darkness of category, the darkness of all the de-individualizing mantras and obsessions and ideologies that are pandered about today, then this description of how to liberate yourself from those is going to feel dark.
Yeah.
As if, because, you know, the event remains the most alienating. Well, you know, to that I say, alienate me from those things.
Yeah.
Let me feel alienated. Let me feel I am an alien, that the worldview views me as an alien. Let me be outside it.
Right.
Let me linger around it and discover what's beyond it. Right? Because the worldview is seen as light, but I would say it's not.
Yeah.
Historiology is seen as light on the subject, right? But I would say it's actually just it's actually stuffing the subject down your mouth.
Yeah.
And submitting it to the darkness of your appetite and gut. And then pooping it out and calling it university. I think that's all I have to say.
Great. Chat group.
Right?
Yes.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah, that was fun.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful spending time with you. I can still hear the owl.
Yeah.
Listen, maybe people can hear it. Let's listen for a second. There's two of them.
Yeah.
They're talking.
And then I think there's a third one really far away.
Really?
Yeah.
They sound exactly like our son. Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.